What does culture have to do with economic justice? How do stories from our past help us understand our present and imagine a different tomorrow? I'm Rosalie Harden, executive producer of Faith and Finance. Welcome to the podcast of Neighborhood Economics, Healing Our Communities, a virtual event held in November of 2020. Economies of interdependence are emerging all around us, and neighborhood economics brought together entrepreneurs and changemakers, developers and storytellers, pastors and impact investors to share where their communities are finding hope and a way forward. In this episode, you'll hear culture makers, curators, and listeners talk about what it means to truly embody the neighborhood piece of neighborhood economics. The conversation is moderated by David Bailey and features Marlon Hall and Joanna Taft. Joanna is the executive director of the Harrison Arts Center in Indianapolis and a leader in grassroots cultural development. Marlon is an anthropologist and has worked in Houston both as a pastor and as an arts entrepreneur. His latest adventure is in Tulsa, working with integrating the cultural stories with the destruction of Black Wall Street as they work together to see what can emerge. Our moderator and culture track convener, David Bailey, founded Erebon, an organization devoted to the use of cultural markers to create transformative environments. He is actively engaged doing that work with communities, primarily faith communities, all over the country. What follows is a part of the Creating a Culture of Change plenary for Neighborhood Economics. These remarks were given as a part of Neighborhood Economics, Healing Our Communities, a virtual conference that was produced by Faith and Finance in November of 2020. The full hour-long plenary is available for purchase at faithfinance.net. There you can also find video and podcast episodes of the other sessions that were a part of the conference.
So we said neighborhood economics, that this is what this conference is about. It's about neighborhood economics. And we're starting off the conversation talking about culture. You know, we're talking about community stories about the past, present, and future. And so my question for you all is, why does culture creation and culture curation matter in neighborhood economics? Why does culture creation and culture curation matter in neighborhood economics?
Okay, so I already talked about how art is powerful, but I do want to step back a second and remind us all that this is what we are created for. All of us are created for this because there's this thing called the cultural mandate, right? The beginning of Genesis, where humankind was called to continue the work of creation. And we think of that, oh, that's like having babies and planting gardens, but it's so much more. It's pursuing social justice. It's building cities. It's restoring neighborhoods. It's restoring relationships. And so we were created with this call to do that. So for those of us that think, oh, that's somebody else's job, no. It's needed in neighborhoods. We need to do it in neighborhoods. But when it's hard work, and neighborhood work is so hard. Neighborhood work's hard work. But if you have a call, it gives you passion, it gives you courage, and it gives you perseverance. And so that then you can understand the hard work that goes into using this powerful thing called art to bring healing.
That's great. And just even feedback on what you're saying, it is hard, right? And I think different ones of us have calls, but you know, to borrow from Maka Fujimori's book, Culture Care, he talks about how there are three types of capitals that are needed. You need social capital to get things done. You need creative capital. And you need economic capital. And rarely do any of us have all three. It actually takes community. Like the whole community has all three. And so some people might not have the creative call they might not have the capital or the calling to be creatives per se, or artists, or writers, or poetry, or poets, or filmmakers, but they might have economic capital, or some people that may not have economic capital, but have social capital. And that's what I kind of saw a lot, what you were doing, Marlon, and the work that you're doing, like, as you're doing these anthropological studies, I mean, like, or even you did this thing called, like, these dinner salons, where you kind of, like, help to curate, like, social capital. And so, Could you maybe talk a little bit about that? And I also want you to answer the question, but could you talk a little bit about that salon?
Yeah, I could do both. You know, the word curate has an etymological root that's connected to ministry. It's a calling. And so the concept of curatorial leadership is not monopolized by art institutions. In fact, it's inspired by spiritual institutions. So to curate is a spiritual calling. And so I live on my spiritual calling as a curator of human potential through three or four different practices. One is filmmaking. I tell better stories to people about people, one folkloric film at a time. As a visual anthropologist, I go to communities and I find the stories that represent the heart of the community. I do that through salon dinner parties, where 16 cognitively diverse people, cognitively and culturally diverse people, come to the table, and the only rule is that you can't talk about what you do for a living. You can only talk about who you are and why you are. And people get reduced to the least common denomination of their humanity in 15 minutes when they don't have to worry about talking about what they do. And my inspiration for the design of the salon dinner parties comes from the Medici or the Medici family, tomato, tomato. And Mama Medici used to have a salon or a bedroom. She'd set up a table and she would sit artists next to architects and architects next to teachers and teachers next to trash men. Trash men would learn something from teachers they couldn't learn from their contemporaries, and teachers would learn from artists they couldn't learn from their contemporaries. And ultimately, these dinner parties spawned the Italian Renaissance. And so my work through my filmmaking, my work through salon dinner party throwing, is to cultivate Renaissance through cross-pollination. Renaissance in communities, Renaissance in the world. I'm also a yoga teacher too. I was doing an anthropological study. I was doing a film about a yogi who takes yoga into prisons. And one of the things I have to do as an anthropologist, I mentioned it earlier, is participant observation. So I practiced yoga for 6 months in this teacher's class before I started to shoot the film. And I decided to practice in the front of the classroom so that the people in the room didn't think I was looking at their booties in the back of the room. But practicing in the front of the room made me to accelerate my practice and also meet other teachers. And so I went rogue after I finished this anthropological study and film about a yogi and started to teach yoga. So my practice as a yoga teacher is to invite communities to remember the dismembered parts of their existences that come from trauma. So remember the mind to the body through the practice of yoga, and remember, connect the dismembered parts of the body to the soul. And so my curation of human potential is a spiritually motivated practice through salon dinner parties, cross-pollination, films, and yoga.
Yeah, well, you know, you actually kind of got me getting in that yoga life too, man.
Bro, you
got
to get that yoga life.
I've been doing it, man. It's great. It's been good. You were inspiration.
Those of you who are Christians and you don't like that word yoga because you think it's satanic, just call it Christian stretching. Just Christian stretching. How about that?
Yeah, I've been doing some Christian stretching and prayer.
Good. Amen. Amen.
Namaste. So, you know, I feel like you kind of answered a little bit, but I just want to get it to you direct. Like, you know, why does culture creation and curation matter, like in particular in economic development, neighborhood economics, like in just trying to curate the richness of the whole community?
You know, I wish that I was smart, big, bad, and bold enough to create culture. But I all y'all probably can. I have a limitation in that area, so I don't try to create culture. What my hope to do is to listen for culture, not create it. I think that oftentimes religious institutions, academic institutions, and institutions driven by income, we think that our knowledge makes the difference in the impact that we make. I don't think that's true. Our knowledge to create culture makes the difference. For me, that's not true. My knowledge doesn't make the difference. My listening does. And so my primary resource for curating human potential is not creating anything, but just listening for the good that's already been created. There's so much already there. There's really no need for us to create anything more in communities, no matter how they look, no matter what little resources they have. I'm not so bold as to believe that I can create culture in those communities. I'd like to spend my time listening for God where he can be found in those communities, with my ears and not with my mouth.
Man, that's a powerful sermon right there. That is because I think that we're in a culture where I think we feel like we can change things from thinking, like having the right ideas and talking.
No.
And like listening is like almost like a lost art form. I mean, one of the things I talk about a lot is we can have two different postures in listening. We can listen as a conversation partner or we can listen as a debate partner.
What's the difference?
When you listen as a conversation partner, you're listening to understand and continue the conversation and continue to cultivate the conversation. When you listen as a debate partner, you're listening to defeat your enemy, you know, and to be like, hey, this is like, you're stupid. This is why. This is wrong. And I think it's actually a dishonoring of the image of God in the folks, because whether I agree with you or not, there's a logic to why you think the way that you think, that what has caused you to think the way that you think. And so for me to like just be like, oh, you're just dumb because you think differently than me, I actually think that's like dishonoring the image of God in you. We can all be wrong. That's a thing. But to honor the image of God in one another is really, really important.
I think sometimes as curators and culture makers, we lead past backwards, meaning we lead from what we are against rather than what we are for.
That's good, bro.
And when you lead from what you're for, it moves your project forward, forward. But when you move from the poverty that you are against, from the social degradation that you are against, you move againstward, and what's that gonna get you?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So when we listen, we listen for the good that's there. But when we use our knowledge, we're using our knowledge to fight against evil or wrong. And so I try to move forward in my work as an anthropologist, as a curator, rather than againstward.
I think that there were many years when I was far too interested in who was right and who was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I just want to know and love people. Like, mm-hmm. loving people is the hardest thing. It's the first thing, but it's the hardest thing. And so I'm done with the arguments. I am here for people, and I am here to make sure the work of my organization is knowing and loving people. And that's it.
Thank you all so much, Marlon. Thank you so much for Joanna. And this is such a rich conversation. And I just hope, listeners, that you would definitely take this as we start talking about money and economics and real estate and all of these different entrepreneurship, take this whole conversation of culture and story and communities, both past, present, and future, in light of this whole conversation. Thank y'all so much. And just give it, I know you can't hear them, but give it up for this great panel.
This was a shortened version of the culture plenary from Neighborhood Economics, Healing Our Communities. This edited conversation you heard was between David Bailey of Erebon, Joanna Taft of the Harrison Center for the Arts in Indianapolis, and Marlon Hall, an anthropologist who blends faith and the arts for cultural change. Our Neighborhood Economics Conference is fully available in video and podcast formats at community.faithfinance.net. Next up, music by David Benjamin Blower. David was our musical guest artist for Neighborhood Economics. You can find more of his music at davidbenjaminblower.com. I hope you enjoy, and again, thanks for listening.
Everything is changed, all doth run its course. The present fears nothing more than a Trojan horse. ye who stake your existence on borders and walls. The emerging future is among you, it's within us all. Everything has changed. Be still and listen. Can you hear the air quietly hissing out somewhere, blowing in your head? Stare at nothing for a moment. Don't even think. The world inflated around you is all going limp. Everything is as it ever was, only more so. Behold all of thy gods, same as these years ago. And the screen is a Berlin Wall between us all and the show. Yesterday's entertainment is tomorrow's government, so everything is as it ever was, only more so. The virtues that held back the weather discharged long time ago. And all you terrified zealots did vote your messiah to the throne. One criminal gang for another, you all make your deals with Rome. Everything is strange, and who here moved the peace that began the rearrangement of all things from west to east? Behold the readjustment of all those who said they knew, and all the listless players that don't know what to do. Everything is strange, and who now knows the rules? Still hammering the present crises with a box of yesterday's tools. Who still hopes down telescopes upon this ship of fools? Who's still looking for the promised land to drill for fossil fuels? Everything is under strain. Where now are thy failing gods? Trapped in the black mirror, in flight and dropping bombs. Behind fences lined with wire, policed by guards with dogs. Sat down in the seats of power, or you go tell that fox. Everything is under strain. Death and worms in the royal box. All you anxious clouds will be your lightning rods. Scapegoat the wanderers for your decline and fall. What else is crucifixion but your loss of control? In pain, so many tears unshed. There'll be no reparations, there'll be no justice yet. And all that has been taken, that never shall be returned. And all that has been broken, forever shall bear the wounds. Everything is in pain. Gather ye round the past, for all the noble industries that never shall be resparked. And all the lost identities is thrown beneath the wheels. And all the ancient slaveries that shall not be healed. Shed tears forever, oh let them never end. For how many tears shall we say before this sorrow is spent? And when you've wept until you know there are not tears enough, then shall ye be ready to turn and face the rising sun. Then shall ye be ready to turn about from that before. Then shall you end your lust for victories in this fruitless war. Then shall you end your hopes of saving what you thought was yours. Then shall you turn and see a future which belongs to none and all.